are listening to a free version of Majority Report with Sam Steeder. To support this show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
It is Wednesday, August 2nd, 2017. My name is Sam Steeder. This is the four-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, finally, the Department of Justice to sue on behalf of white aggrievement. Meanwhile, we have only 3 years to avoid the worst-case climate change scenario. Trump's assault on your health care to continue, while Mitch McConnell vows to cut wealthy taxes without the help of Democrats, except for maybe a couple. Also, Donald Trump has no control of his administration, but the right has made progress. Coast Guard and DEA chiefs rebuke their commander-in-chief. And a big document dump. Monsanto's independent research, not so independent. Meanwhile, Cory Booker becomes Jimmy Reefercake's favorite senator. And we answer the question, is Wells Fargo horrible? Or even worse. Meanwhile, Mueller adds a former DOJ fraud and foreign bribery investigator to his team. Weird. So strange.
It's a witch hunt.
Why would he do that? Must be wrapping things up. All that and more on today's program. And we should say right up front, Donald Trump has lamentedly? How am I pronouncing that correctly? Lamentedly?
Belatedly?
No, he lamented.
He lamented. Why don't you say he lamented?
Lamented. But I was using it as a No, as an adjective? You can't use lamentedly? Adverb?
Sure, I mean, I understand what you mean. So, in terms of communication.
Melancholically signed. Reluctantly, I guess. I don't know. I wanted to get a little
sadly.
More.
Sadly. It is a word.
Sadly.
Yes, a word. Congratulations.
What was
Thank
his
you.
Word?
Lacrimosity.
Sad. Lamentedly.
Lamentedly.
Sadly.
Okay.
Sadly.
Lamentedly signed the sanctions that were passed overwhelmingly in the House and the Senate. These sanctions are new sanctions on Russia, North Korea, and Iran. The highlight of the Russian sanctions is the congressional review provision, which basically says, the president can't mess with these. Some arguments that it's an infringement upon the president's executive power, but we'll see about that. Meanwhile, the sanctions on North Korea involve reporting requirements of the executive branch and sanctions any persons who knowingly, directly, or indirectly purchase from North Korea large quantities of certain metals, including gold, sell or transfer large quantities of rocket or jet fuel for non-commercial air travel. Sorry, Matt. You're going to have to find a different side hustle. And insures or registers government vessels or maintains correspondent account with any non-UN approved North Korean financial institution. There's apparently some type of a banking innovation that involves a sort of an arm's length type of account. Lastly, the Iran provision entitled Countering Iran's Destabilizing Activities Act of 2017. Ah, oh, jeez.
Great name.
Great name. It really gets to the heart of the matter because it's like destabilization and such.
KID Tooth 17 would be the acronym. It requires the administration an update every 2 years, a strategy for deterring conventional and asymmetric Iranian activities and threats that directly threaten the United States and its key allies in the Middle East, North Africa, and beyond. So that basically putting out a report. It would be interesting if someone put out the similar report of what we actually just do.
What we do or what the Saudis do.
That
I mean,
would
the
be
great him. Irony is that these brigades and people they're targeting now are at least synced up with us when it comes to Syria, because groups like Hezbollah are the ones that are actually beating back Jabhat al-Nusra. And this is what gives credence to that dumb left argument. When you see something like Hezbollah just took ground from al-Qaeda in Syria recently, and then we're, you know, sanctioning them, it's like, well, wait a second.
Right.
Wouldn't you prefer that?
Well, I mean, the same people who are pushing this don't know the difference between Iran and al-Qaeda anyways.
Well, that's true. But then you also have a guy like David Petraeus who does know the difference, but he's out of government. He wrote a couple years ago that we should think about aligning with al-Qaeda in Syria against the Shia.
So you've got this reporting requirement. The bill also requires the president to sanction individuals who are facilitating Iran's ballistic missile capabilities. A ballistic missile is one of those missiles that they go straight up in a trajectory, not straight up, but the head off in a trajectory, and then gravity brings them down. And my understanding is that their ballistic missile program, I don't know how, if they have long distance or mid distance, but
Even mid distance could hit Israel.
Yes,
that's what it's
easy.
About.
Yeah, your longest distance ballistic missile, about 3,000 miles, I think. So they can't reach us.
It's all Israel. And maybe Saudi, actually.
Right. The bill goes on to require the president sanction those who act on behalf of persons designated for this conduct, as well as facilitators and sanctions evaders. Also, there are sanctions imposing officials, agents, or affiliates of the Iranian Revolutionary Guard. The bill also requires the administration to report every 180 days on new designations it or the European Union has made targeting Iranian proliferators, terrorist facilitators, or human rights abusers. So this is geared towards putting requirements on the administration to maintain a certain level of Iranian hostility propaganda, essentially, or fodder for that. It is obviously Iran has a lot of other options to the extent that they are seeking any of these materials. Because the rest of the world has not signed on to these sanctions. So their efficacy is in creating feelings of distrust and hostility between us and Iran, but not necessarily in any of the things one would imagine these things were structured for, right? We're not going to cut down on the amount on their ballistic missile program. We're not going to prevent them from funding Hezbollah or whatever other activities they're going
to
do.
And these are all of the things that people tried to inject as poison pills. Remember when they were negotiating the agreement, Republicans and some Democrats always tried to inject this stuff versus the really narrow, specific agreement they had.
The agenda from the beginning on the nuclear deal was always... Yeah. Specifically on the narrow thing. Yes.
They're doing it.
And the argument was, but you haven't handled all the extraneous things that you decided not to negotiate on.
Right. You didn't have a grand unified deal. We're not doing that. Actually having a very specific one.
All right. So let's get into, there's a couple of things that are really important to talk about. You know, you wonder why would Jeff Sessions, Jeffrey, what is his full name?
Beauregard.
Sessions. Take the slings and arrows of that uncouth man in the White House being so rude and offensive such that he had to actually travel out of the country to take a calming vacation in El Salvador to talk about MS-13. What would compel a man? It is, I'll tell you, it is a sense of mission. A sense that he is on a God-given mission to make sure white people get a fair shake in this country. In addition, of course, to the voter suppression, and you remember, you have Donald Trump's Election Integrity Commission headed by Chris Kobach. But meanwhile, the Department of Justice Civil Rights Division, and within that, the political part of the Civil Rights Division, has sent letters to 50 states seeking essentially the same material in an attempt to begin to pressure states to disenfranchise voters. We also know what Jeff Sessions has done in terms of you get arrested, you're going to have your stuff basically dispossessed, even if you haven't been convicted. Also has unshackled, really not unshackled, has encouraged police departments across the country to engage in the worst of practices by saying, you will have no problems with us. So to the extent that you have felt any oversight now with anything that you're doing, that oversight will be gone. You know, it's basically like saying to your kids, hey, the liquor cabinet is over there, and I just want you to know we're definitively not going to be home, maybe ever again.
Have an open and free exchange of ideas with those
please.
That you put in custody. Feel. Don't suppress your freedom of movement of speech with them.
I just want to make it clear that while we're leaving you the liquor cabinet and we're not coming home, your grandpa, Don Trump, he is going to just come over here and tell you exactly how to take shots. Right?
And
I mean,
so basically what I'm trying to say is put some black kids in comas.
You literally had the president of the United States basically advocating the police to rough up their prisoners. And a Department of Justice says, like, we're not going to check on you. Well, that apparently was not the only mission that God had put Jeff Sessions on. Trump administration is preparing to redirect resources of the Justice Department's Civil Rights Division. You know, I want to remind you of the interview that we did with Sam Bagenstose. I guess maybe this was in December. He was a member of this division under the Clinton administration and then under the Obama administration and saw how it had been ravaged during the Bush administration. And I would imagine if we have him back, and maybe we should soon, what we're seeing is, I mean, I hate this phrase, but that on steroids. Although steroids we're going to now allow.
Well, I just think if a man would like the better shot hitting a grand slam home run, why shouldn't he be able to ingest experimental hormones into his own body? You ever listen to the Joe Rogan podcast?
I would also say it's very... It would certainly enhance the ability to pick cotton, let's say.
I'm just spitballing here, but say you put a young buck in prison for an unlimited term and you wanted to force them to do uncompensated physical labor, but you might want to put a little bit of a, I don't know, hormonal treatment in some of their cornmeal.
At the canteen.
Might make a great deal of sense when they're mixing that up in the commissary.
So, reported today by Charlie Savage in the New York Times, the Trump administration preparing to redirect the resources of the Justice Department's Civil Rights Division toward investigating and suing universities over affirmative action admissions policies deemed to discriminate against white applicants. This is according to a document obtained by the Times. The document apparently is basically a hiring announcement. Seeks lawyers, current lawyers, interested in working for a new project on, quote, investigations and possible litigation related to intentional race-based discrimination in college and university admissions. It will be run out of the division's front office. which is where the political appointees work, rather than its educational opportunity section, which is where the career civil servants and professionals who deal with this work. Roger Clegg, a former top official in the Civil Rights Division during the Reagan administration, famous, I believe, John Roberts was there, arguing how to dismantle the Voting Rights Act. It took 30 years, but he got there. And the first Bush administration, who is now president of the Conservative Center for Equal Opportunity, with apparently a subtitle of, can you believe it? We called it that. Called the project a welcome and long overdue development. Meanwhile, Kristen Clark, who is the president of the Lawyers Committee for Civil Rights under law, said this is deeply disturbing. It could be a dog whistle that could invite a lot of chaos and unnecessarily create hysteria among colleges and universities who may fear that the government may come down on them for efforts to maintain diversity on their campuses. Now, understand that the Supreme Court recently ruled that they have narrowed what is allowable under so-called affirmative action programs. They have found in the past that if that there are educational benefits from having a diverse student body, as long as there is a more holistic approach to trying to increase that diversity. So if you use a combination of geography and socioeconomic status, but you can't use quotas or race-based systems. Mr. Clegg said he would expect, and he should know, folks, the project to focus on investigating complaints the Civil Rights Division received about any university admissions program. So be clear, when Abigail Fisher, who didn't get into Texas because she claimed a Latino or black person got her spot, she comes up with a complaint, they're going to have a whole team that's going to welcome her to Washington, take her complaint. And one, it's very hard, I would imagine, for imagine that white people would be complaining that somehow they've lost out in this. He also suggested the project...
Bob was president. What the hell? Yeah. I want to go to college.
I would imagine during some lawsuits, there would be some interesting things to come out in the course of discovery as to maybe how Donald Trump got his kids into UPenn. Or maybe
tell you what, it
Jared
wasn't through
Kushner.
Affirmative action.
Right.
It was the old-fashioned way. What you do is you bribe college admissions counselors with money so your dim-witted idiot kids go to great schools. It's called America.
He suggested that the project would look for stark gaps in test scores and dropout rates among different racial cohorts within student bodies, which he said would be evidence suggesting that admissions offices were putting too great an emphasis on applicants' race and crossing a line the Supreme Court has drawn. Understand, if it is the case that African-Americans at an all-white school, let's say, or a predominantly white school, feel like, wow, I feel pretty alienated here, and I drop out, this is going to be, for the Department of Justice, prima facie evidence that they didn't belong there because of their grade. Their grades were inflated to get them there. If you're looking for gaps in test scores, so the notion that perhaps like, hey, I mean, I can tell you this right now, that the number of people who, in my daughter's cohort, who get tutoring for all of the tests that end up being used for admissions, whether it's in gifted and talented programs in New York City or whether it's to get into the better schools in middle school, this is all public school stuff, is I would bet, I don't even know what the multiplier is, but they all get it. Well, they all get it, but a lot of people get it. And it definitively helps raise your scores on these things. So the idea that you're going to look for these things as indications that black people, brown people didn't belong in the school is, I don't know what else to say. It is, we have now an attempt, and it's just an attempt right now. I mean, there's a suggestion that maybe there's just a way of scaring schools to shut down their own programs, like, you know, self-deport or something. But we're watching the beginnings of an attempt to institutionalize and send us back to where we were decades and decades ago in terms of making and purifying the race of the student bodies in this country.
Purifying, Jesus.
Right.
Yeah. Do you also think that we've always made the point that Trump obviously lied about the economic agenda, any type of, you know, all of his sort of lies about populism and Wall Street and everybody being covered. But they're keeping their word with xenophobia and social reaction. And it just seems to me that, like, with the ban being announced over Twitter of people, transgender people in the military, and then this, which I'm sure Sessions was planning regardless, like, the more they fail legislatively, like, they're going to lean even heavier on this stuff, right?
Of course. Yeah. Of course. And remember, Jeff Sessions is Bannon's boy.
Right.
Jeff Sessions and Bannon seems to be the only one still standing in there.
Well, I don't exactly stand, but I fucking lead into shit.
I'll remind you that the former general, Kelly, over at DHS, ICE somehow got the word that they can go after anybody, and they should. And that if you want to go after the most vulnerable, the least harmful immigrants in this country without documentation, you want to go after moms, you want to go after kids, and you can get those numbers up, by all means, go. Do it. So it's not like the new chief of staff who's going to allow Donald Trump to pivot is going to be putting any type of brakes on this. Meanwhile, just a reminder, and that's really all, you know, we can give at this point, because the only person whose efficacy in the administration is rivaled by Sessions would be Scott Pruitt, and maybe his is even greater. That we got two new reports out saying that, saying that the outlook is even worse than what we heard, I guess, about a month or two ago, when Cristina Figueres, former head of the United Nations Framework Convention on Climate Change, joined with a group of climate scientists and policy wonks to state there are only 3 years left to get emissions moving sharply downward. If that is, we're holding out hope of limiting warming of the globe to below the 2 degrees Celsius, 3.6 degrees Fahrenheit, above pre-industrial temperatures, often cited as the threshold where dangerous warming begins. Now, obviously, you know, there's a lot of, like, interpretation involved in this and what constitutes the word dangerous. But apparently two new studies have come out over the past couple of days suggesting, one, that the climate has been warming longer than we thought due to human influences. So there's even less remaining carbon dioxide that we can emit to avoid 2 degrees of warming. And the other report suggests that there's only a 5% chance that the world can hold limiting below 2 degrees Celsius, and a mere 1% chance that it can be limited below 1.5 degrees Celsius, which is what a group of small islands around the world basically say they need to maintain their existence. So, you know, just a reminder, maybe we'll get them in 2020.
Well, right. I voted for the candidate with the, you know, the candidate with the Green New Deal, so I feel pretty good about that. I mean, while you're worried about this United Nations conference, not a single word about my wife's killing spree. Which, by the way, you think that she would have stayed in the Paris Agreement? She would have reversed the Paris Agreement. She would have banned black kids from college. That's what my wife planned on it. But you just sit there in your little MSNBC ivory tower making apologies for the Democratic establishment with Chris Hayes and Rachel Maddow. And y'all just have a little fun time together until we finally have this nuclear war with Russia that y'all want so badly. Disgusting. Hashtag fake left. Hashtag sellouts. Hashtag wannabe MSNBC. Hashtag legalize weed.
All right, let's talk briefly about healthcare before we pivot like the Republicans are to tax cuts. Right now, contrary to, apparently there's something going around that I think came from Reddit, but I've seen it on Twitter, where John McCain is a hero because he secretly was able to make it impossible for them to not bring it up again. Understand what happened the other night when John McCain sank the bill. He was voting on an amendment. What Mitch McConnell did is he only presented amendments that were basically stalking horse for the underlying bill. And the reason why he did that is from because he needed to keep the reconciliation bill alive. Now, that's the 2017 reconciliation bill. You only get one a year, one a fiscal year. There's a 2018 that goes live in September, but you can keep the 17, you can push that even past September 30th. Gets a little bit complicated, but apparently it's doable. But you cannot start on the 2018 and go back to 2017. As soon as you bring up the 2018 reconciliation bill, which they want to use for tax reform, the 2017 dies. So it appears like, at the very least, they've shelved it, but they haven't put it away. Could come back. Lindsey Graham is his little plan to basically block grant everything.
Keep the taxes, block the grants. Let's get this done. Come on, y'all. We're all going to be melted down. We have this giant nuclear conflict with North Korea that I'm fixing to start, so might as well take away their health care.
Well, that's going to be...
Come on, y'all. Let's do it.
That's his jobs program for North Carolina. Wow. If there's no Koreas and no Japan... And parts of Asia completely
wiped out. Well, melt all those yellow bastards down and genetically modify some rice patties for us. And then we can cut Medicaid.
All right.
I'm a moderate.
So understand, Donald Trump has from the beginning been talking about we should just let Obamacare fall and then they'll have to negotiate. Starting really... Under the Obama administration, when the Congress voted to defund the risk corridors for insurers, which is basically an insurer says, okay, I'm going to go into this market. I'm going to offer a product on the exchange. I don't really know who's going to buy it. And if I don't know who's going to buy it, I don't have any actuarial tables that tell me how much I'm going to pay out versus the amount that I'm going to take in. And so I can't manage my business model. Now, frankly, this is why the insurance industry was going to die anyways. And why, for a long time, Joe Lieberman, I believe, was supportive of a buy-in at age 55 or Medicare for 55 and older. Because the business model of health insurance generally doesn't work. Unless you... keep it afloat with government subsidies. So while the Republican plans are don't even constitute any plans, the Democratic plan that we have, the worst part of it is just the subsidies of private insurance. Expansion of Medicaid is good. The patient protections and actually making sure the product is a product is good. But the risk corridor has basically allowed the insurance companies to go into the markets blind, and the government basically saying, we're going to backstop you. If your losses exceed an extra, this amount, we're going to pay you. We're going to subsidize you, almost like you would farmers, right? You put your crops out there. If the shit hits the fan, we got you covered. Congress defunded that. There are lawsuits right now that have already been ongoing trying to sue the government into paying for those risk corridors. But what else you've seen is that in predominantly the Republican-controlled states, they have made it much harder for the insurance companies in these individual markets, the risk corridors being the primary thing. The instability that has been created by Donald Trump has basically said to insurance companies, like, we don't even know now if we're going to get our subsidies, the CSRs, the cost sharing reduction, which are basically, again, these are subsidies paid directly to insurance companies on behalf of people living between 133% and 400% of poverty, who go into the exchanges and get discounts, essentially tax reductions, on their insurance. And insurance companies don't know if that's going to exist, so they raise their insurance rates. Here is Chris Cuomo talking to Mick Mulvaney about any attempts to stabilize the insurance markets.
I think the president will enable, to the extent that he has control, the CSR payments to those markets so they stay stabilized.
I think we've said from the very beginning, the time that he got into office, that we'd look at these on a month-by-month basis, and that position has not changed.
But aren't you then holding those payments hostage and encouraging the insurers to do exactly what they're doing, which is to say we're going to have to raise premiums because of the uncertainty, the exact same uncertainty that you say is the problem?
Chris, we're having the exact same conversation we had 30 seconds ago.
Yeah, because I feel like you're dancing around the reality that you need those payments in order to stabilize the markets. And if you're holding them hostage, you're essentially putting people at risk.
Stop for a second. Stop for a second. These payments have been there for years.
Right.
The markets are not stable. You are making the assumption that if we make the payments, the
markets...
No, stop for a second.
All markets are not unstable.
You asked me the question, let me finish the answer.
All markets are not unstable.
You asked me the question, let me finish the answer. You are assuming that with these CSR payments, the markets will stay stable. That is a false assumption.
More
That's not a
stable.
Fair question.
More stable than otherwise. The insurers are saying we're going to have to raise premiums if you don't give them to us. What do you call
more
it?
More stable is replacing this with something that actually works. That is more stable.
And the CBO
and that
said that every one of your suggestions made it worse. Every single one, the CBO said. And your reaction to that was to try to dismantle the CBO.
There you go. Wow, you got to hand it to Chris Cuomo, Mick Mulvaney. This guy, I got to say, not the A-team. Not the A-team. Now, understand the dynamic here. They say they're going to do this month to month. Go in to your boss's office, or you, if you're a boss, go to your employees and say, guess what we're going to do? I'm going to let you know at the end of the month if I'm going to pay you. I've been paying you all this time, so
I'm
going
to do it month
happen.
To month, do you
exactly.
see?
Exactly. Honestly.
Matt, I mean, all of a sudden, will lose his cool. Wait a second. I have a giant bog shipment coming
it's
in
true.
At the end of the month.
I'm not saying that's. I'm not saying that people don't do that. Now, a lot of people work that way. But the bottom line is, that does not make you feel like, hey, now's the time for me to buy a new house. Or I think I'm
make
going to.
Make some long-term plans.
I think I'm going to buy that couch. No,
I make long-term plans based off of flimsy financial chicanery all the time.
So there you go. I mean, the bottom line is they know just by threatening these payments, it forces insurance companies to raise their rates as a way of protecting themselves, because insurance companies do not sell insurance for a month at a time. So they know that's what this is doing. In an attempt to squeeze people, they are also in an attempt to destabilize these markets. They are not putting the money into promoting the open enrollment period, where people are supposed to sign up. You want to expand the risk pool. The more people who buy insurance, the cheaper the insurance becomes because you're expanding the risk pool. They are also getting rid of the navigators and the centers where people would figure out how to buy insurance. That's also gone. They are explicitly, Obama was a little bit implicit, but explicitly not enforcing the mandate, encouraging people who feel they don't need health insurance to not buy it, and therefore making the risk pools filled with people who are more convinced they need it and making insurance more expensive. And then there's a whole series of waivers that they could be issuing to probably Republican states without the same sort of requirements that they've had in the past. Now, the only good news today is that in the lawsuit, the Republicans had been suing Obama to stop the CSR payments, the subsidies. And apparently the judge in the D.C. Circuit, or the judges, I should say, D.C. Circuit, remember, this is the one where the nuking the filibuster made it possible to fill these. Republicans wanted to actually shrink the size of this court so they could have a majority while they were blocking all of Obama's nominees. It's a hugely important court. The D.C. Circuit decided, I guess this was last night, to grant New York Attorney General Eric Schneiderman's motion to intervene in House versus Price, which used to be, I think, House versus Bacillus, in defense of the Affordable Care Act's cost-sharing reduction subsidies. So now the White House can't just say, hey, we're no longer defending ourselves against this suit. Now there's another party there. This is huge. So that's essentially what the Republican plan is going to be, to continue to destabilize these markets. The problem is that they're going to own it. I think that ship has sailed. They've just spent, this has been just too high profile where people wouldn't understand that dynamic. I mean, we just saw Chris Cuomo sending Mulvaney back to the shed, to the woodshed, in about the most succinct 180 seconds I think I've ever heard.
What I like about Mulvaney is he always has this sort of confused, stupid person's look on his face. So he never understands when he's been sent to the shed.
He
probably got off that. He's like, I set Cuomo straight, liberal CNN fake news.
The experience that I have always had when I have actually debated right wingers is that they're so unused to actually having a debate on the merits of the whatever they're talking about, that they're just completely blindsided when somebody has a response for what they're saying. Like, totally. They're genuinely, I mean, you know, it's almost like there's a third option between that evil and dumb thing, which is like devil. Or
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Devil. Like dumb devil.
Holy
devil.
Cow. Wow. Yeah. There you go.
Mick Mulvaney looks like an incredibly stupid, evil person. He looks evil enough to want to actively cause people harm, but is also obviously genuinely very dumb.
He also looks like he's very jaundiced. He's yellow and sweating and like there's something wrong. Very wrong.
Well, I think that's sometimes what's on the inside starts to ooze out. Now, all right, lastly, I think yesterday, did we mention, I don't know if we mentioned this, yesterday, Senate Democrats sent a letter, it was 2 days ago, 2 or 3 days ago, sent Mitch McConnell a letter offering to work with the Republicans on bipartisan tax reform, but only if it does not cut taxes for the wealthy, add to the federal deficit, or allow Republicans to enact legislation on their own. In other words, down reconciliation.
So what's the point?
So, well, the offer was an offer that the Republicans, of course, were going to reject. The problem is that it was only signed by 45 Democratic lawmakers. And those Democrats who did not sign it were, I think it was Joe Donnelly from Indiana, Joe Manchin from West Virginia, and Heidi Heitkamp of North Dakota.
Thanks,
good job, Matt. And I want you to listen to Mitch McConnell today or yesterday admitting that healthcare, saying a couple of things. One, they're going to pass this, right? Through they're talking about tax reform, saying there is no stomach amongst the Republican caucus to getting rid of the filibuster, saying the problem was Republicans when it came to healthcare. And then I think at the end here, he has an allusion to maybe how they're going to do tax so-called reform.
About a series of tweets from the president about some of the procedure. We talked about reconciliation. We talked about lowering the threshold here. You have been adamant and asked before that you don't think that there's the wherewithal on both sides of the aisle to lower the bar for legislative filibusters. What did you make of the president kind of directing floor traffic from 1600 Pennsylvania this weekend when he was saying you ought to do things this way, you ought to do things this way, and changing the Senate rules?
Well, I mean, it's pretty obvious that our problem with health care was not the Democrats. We didn't have 50 Republicans. There are not the votes in the Senate, as I've said repeatedly to the president and to all of you, to change the rules of the Senate. There are not enough. It would require 50 or 51 Republicans to agree to do that. The votes are simply not there. But the good news is the top two priorities of the president don't require anything more than a simple majority, tax reform and health care. And there's an opportunity. We're continuing to score some of the options on health care that Senator Portman, Senator Cruz, Senator Graham, Senator Cassidy wanted to take a look at. The reconciliation vehicle for health care has not yet expired, so there's still an opportunity to do that. So I think I've just told you what I've told the president on several occasions.
But is that going on?
And I think where was it he said McConnell also, I think, went on to say there or another place that he anticipates they may have some Democrats when it comes to getting tax reform passed. And in fact, here it is. Kentucky Republican Mitch McConnell cited Tuesday a letter from 45 Democratic senators urging Republicans not to use reconciliation and vowing to oppose a tax plan that adds to the deficit or cuts the annual bill of the richest 1% taxpayers. He said, I don't think this is going to be 1986 when you had bipartisan effort to scrub the code. I remember it well. I was drinking heavily and bringing Congressman Donnelly from Quincy, Massachusetts, his case of Bush beer and Merit cigarettes that he used to indulge in every day. He goes on to say, Democratic senators who did not sign the letter may be open to pro-growth tax reform. And that, of course, is a euphemism for trickle-down economics, which, of course, is a euphemism for cutting taxes for the rich and screwing everyone else. So use the double arm's length euphemism. But that letter is indicative of the problem that they might have with tax cuts in terms of the Democrats. You were able to hold the caucus for health care. I don't know if that's going to happen when it comes to tax cuts. But we got a lot more to talk about in the fun half, ladies and gentlemen. Obviously, a lot more news today, but those are the big
and
stories.
A personal statement.
And a oh yeah, we may get to that.
My or social life is
We may have to get it to get to that tomorrow. We'll see.
Trump and liberal intolerance, totally unfair.
Gonna have to get the DOJ to sue, folks. It is your membership that makes this show possible. Say this every day. It starts to sound rote, but it is the truth. I think a lot of people are hitting some financial issues at the moment on our membership, and we always work out deals with people if they have to cancel. But if you are one of those people who are fortunate enough to not have that situation, Head over to jointhemajorityreport.com. Jointhemajorityreport.com. Become a member. You support the fun half, the free half of this show, and then we give you some bonus content every day. Interviews with Naomi Klein, a rundown of sort of the more arcane and boring stuff you could ever imagine, like today.
Not that boring.
Doing interviews. We're going to be taking some days off at the end of August. Interesting interviews of historians and theorists and other things, all that and more. So support the program by going to jointhemajorityreport.com. Also, you can also support the program by buying your coffee from justcoffee.coop. It's a fair trade co-op. So everybody gets paid a fair share. The coffee is delicious. You can get the Majority Report blend. And you get 10% off, free shipping as well. Use the coupon code MAJORITY. JustCoffee.coop, C-O-O-P. And if you buy your craft from Amazon or Jet.com, head over to MajorityReportKickback.com. Click on the link. Always buy your stuff through that link. We get a kickback. That's why we call it MajorityReportKickback.com. Going to take a quick break. 646-257-3920. Oh, but wait a second. We have a new entry. These things flow. They just flow like a new entry in the genre of fun half. This one is more of a hip hop. I guess this is sort of match the Paul Ryan build the wall thing, right? Which is, that's where it's all going apparently. Like more hip hop and youth oriented.
EDM.
Yeah.
Youth oriented.
Oh my gosh.
Youth oriented EDM. That's my favorite type of music.
Yeah. This is apparently what the kids are doing today.
God.
Kids were doing it too back when I was a kid, but they're still apparently doing some of that, which is good to hear. Youth is eternal, folks.
Oh, my God.
Just not within one person. All right, here is the latest entry into the Sam Cedar / Fun Half mix. Here we go. Cedar. Cedar. Sam Cedar. All right, let me just. Fun half. Sam Cedar. Fun half. Cedar. I don't know. There it is. We're going to have to probably lower that in the podcast so we don't break anybody's ears. All right, head into the fun half, 646-257-3920. See you in there.
Sad. She said no.